How many times have you said to yourself, I'm going to succeed, and yet you keep coming up short? You probably noticed that high achievers with heart do things differently, but you just can't put your finger on it. You're curious about why high achievers accomplish more and have more satisfying relationships. It's because success is the result of your mindset and the consistent actions you take. This show is designed with your success in mind. By revealing these powerful patterns of our dynamic individuals and guest experts, you can model what they do and apply to your future success now. Let's roll up our sleeves and get started. My name is Brigitte Höfele, and this is the Success Patterns Show. And welcome, everyone. It is that time again of this week, the Success Pattern Show. Here are the golden nuggets. This is the show of the golden nuggets. Success patterns are more valuable than ideas. Let me explain. Ideas, while they're very powerful, require some trial and error and a lot of time to put into action. Think about manufacturing, for example. First, you have a new idea, then a proof of concept, then working prototype, then small production batches, and finally, you go into full-scale production. This takes months, maybe even years, and you may have met some people who are collectors of great ideas, and they do little else. Forget everything you've heard about ideas. You're not looking for ideas. You are looking for success patterns, and you're at the right place at the right time. Success patterns are different. Success patterns are better. Why? Well, success patterns are proven, have a logical sequence of steps to follow, have an action imperative, and deliver consistent results. In today's content-rich program, you're going to learn valuable success patterns because our special guest today is a former middle school music teacher, is writing her dissertation on a very interesting topic, and her name is Jen Rafferty. Jen is an educator, an author, an international speaker, a TEDx speaker. She started out as a middle school teacher, was doing that for 15 years in Central New York, and she's bringing great energy, humor, and expertise in all of her presentations while inspiring other educators to stay connected to their purpose, to their why. She's a certified emotional intelligence practitioner and is currently pursuing her PhD in educational psychology. And since inception, the Empowered Educator has reached teachers and school leaders all around the world. Jen has been featured in The Authority magazine, Medium, Thrive Global, Voyage Miami, and was on the TEDx stage with her talk, Generational Change Begins with Empowered Teachers. Oh my goodness, she's one of my kind. She's also the host of the podcast, Take Notes with Jen Rafferty, which is rated in the top 3% of podcasts globally. Help me welcome Jen. Jen, it's so good to have you here with us.
Hi, it's so great to be here with you. Thank you so much for this opportunity to speak with your audience.
A fellow teacher, a fellow educator, my heart is full. That's all I needed today. So there are many things that we've said that we have in common. Education, TEDx, supporting and inspiring other teachers that they can, and other educators that they can become even a better educator and a better speaker and a better teacher, a better person altogether. Emotional intelligence, and that's where I want to start our conversation today. Emotional intelligence, a big, and I would almost say overused word, emotional intelligence. Tell us, what is it, Jen?
Well, for me in academia, I have to say that emotional intelligence isn't actually as big of a thing as it is in the corporate spaces. Mm. Emotional intelligence, if it was, then we would move away more from the IQ and move into EQ. But the focus is really on success being outcome focused on, you know, the amount of A's, the graduation rates. A lot of these metrics that have to do with these external outcomes, and emotional intelligence is starting to become part of this conversation. It has a little bit prior to the pandemic. However, COVID really highlighted the gap of what people actually needed, and that's actually emotional support. You know, our emotions are something that is really completely undervalued. And, you know, we talk in these professional spaces, particularly in academia, you know, it's, well, we don't want to be too emotional. We need to keep it together. And there's this effort now to create these social emotional learning programs for kids, which can increase their emotional intelligence. But when the adults in these spaces don't know what that means and don't actually embody these practices, we kind of leap over their emotional needs. And so the efforts to reach the kids are sometimes moot, or they're not as effective as they can be. So I really am bringing emotional intelligence to the educational spaces for that reason.
I love that on so many levels. And you said something that's really important. If we have people that are teaching emotional intelligence that A, they don't know, you know, what even is that? What kind of impact does that have on me? Or they're so out of balance within their own, you know, inner being that it would not be advantageous for the receiver of that education, AKA the kids, to receive it from the person that might not have the emotional readiness to teach that. So, how do you bridge that gap? How do you get people ready?
Yeah, that's the fun part for me, right? You know, I really think that in all of the work that I do, I get asked this question a lot because it's like, okay, Jen, you know, cool. This sounds like a really awesome idea, but I love what you had said about ideas versus patterns, right? I really want to be able to bring them skills and strategies that they can use consistently as like a rinse and repeat kind of thing so they can sustain a healthy longevity in their career. That's bigger than just this cool idea. Whatever I start with, before I do anything, we need to talk about the elephant in the room, which is the amount of stress that these educators are feeling constantly, because what's been happening is we're not talking about it and we're focusing on test scores, we're focusing on student behaviors, we're focusing on graduation rates. And now, you know, in New York State, we're doing the state testing right now, and we can't do any of that well if we're constantly feeling frustrated and overwhelmed and depleted and burnt out. But we need to start talking about that first before any of the other stuff can happen. So that's always where I start. We talk about stress.
Yeah. And talking about stress, I mean, especially, you know, during the pandemic, post-pandemic, I applaud, I am not in the day-to-day teaching of children anymore. I am on the other side like you are in teaching educators. But I applaud the teachers that are in the trenches, that are dealing with, you know, the mental residual that keeps lingering on from, you know, the pandemic. COVID did a real number on all of us, on the kids, on the parents, on the teachers, on, you know, everyone that you can think of. And that's why, you know, I heard you say, let's focus more on the EQ rather than the IQ. The EQ might not be as, and I'm going to put it in quotation marks, measurable, but I do think, and I want to hear more about, you know, in the dissertation that you're writing, how can it be measured? How would you measure the outcome?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, in my company, you know, metrics are important. Metrics are important everywhere. And that was actually something that I had to figure out early on is, okay, so how do we quantify these things that seem unquantifiable? And what's kind of interesting about that is within my career as a music teacher, you know, putting a number on how well someone did in this creative expressive art was always something I grappled with this like assessment. So it was just interesting now moving into this entrepreneurial space, having to find metrics of things like EQ, I had to get really creative of what could that look like. And what I found, and, you know, my team has discovered over the last, you know, year and a half or so, because it's still a very baby company, but we found that when teachers engage, and this is not just teachers, this is administrators, it's office staff, it's support staff, and I'm even working with parents right now. You know, when everybody in the school community engages and embodies these practices of healthy self-awareness and understands practices of self-regulation, then lots of things change. For example, teacher absenteeism decreases. There is more attrition because we know that there is this great exodus from this profession right now. People who do this work actually can stay longer because they feel good, right? There's lower student anxiety. There's a decrease in student disciplinary referrals. So those are the kinds of metrics that we're looking for, because those are the things that set schools up for success, right? The well-being of a school is 100% dependent on the well-being of the adults in these spaces. And those are the types of metrics that are really important to get back to a really healthy and thriving school community.
Yes. And shouldn't we start out with administration to take some emotional intelligence courses?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so where to start is you know, from where I'm standing, we can start anywhere, actually. What I found to be the most successful is when people from all five parts of this, you know, ecosystem, which is the administrators, the teachers, the support staff, the office staff, and then the parents, when all of them get this training,
yes,
kind of at the same time, that's, yes, when we start to shift this culture, because we're creating this new universal language, right? So it's, you know, when you have this angry parent calling who's activated, the administrator on the other end, or the office staff on the other end, or the teacher on the other hand, can take a beat, because they are self-aware enough to notice that their heart's beating faster, their shoulders are up to their ears, their stomach is clenched. And then they also have tools to deactivate themselves and regulate their nervous system in a way that they can respond to this parent, right? And in a way that that parent then also can understand what they're saying. Until we start with the adults and getting this culture shift, we're not actually changing kids the way that we mean to. So we have to start there. And then, you know, right now, of course, I'm, you know, making another appendage to my programming that does affect kids and does train kids, but we can't start there. So we need to start with the adults, whether it's the administrators or the teachers or the nurses or the bus drivers.
Yes. So you're saying, and this is a song I've been singing for years, well, for decades, in order to have kids growing up into incredible beings that are living on this planet, we don't start with the children. We actually start with the adults around the children.
You know, Brigida, it's cliche because it's true, right? Like, you need to be the change you wish to see in the world.
Yes.
That's it. You cannot, like, I'm done with this narrative of pointing fingers at everything and everybody that can be blamed for the situation. Are there big infrastructure problems within our educational systems? Absolutely. Is deep breathing going to fix these problems? No, that's ridiculous. But what is going to happen is that when you have the skills to actually regulate your nervous system in a way where you have access to the part of your brain that you need in order to solve the problems, nothing is actually going to change. You know, if you can't think clearly, how can you possibly advocate for your students? How can you possibly engage in a student who's having a triggering, activated moment? You can't. So in order to do our job and have this massive impact in this world and create that transformational, generational change, you have to start with yourself.
Amen. I mean, we could stop right here. And you guys have gotten everything that you needed, all of the success patterns that you needed right now.
Yeah.
So where does this urge, this calling, this desire, this incredible passion within you, where does that come from?
Oh, that's such a great question. Well, you know, I didn't leave teaching because I didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't leave teaching because I was burnt out. I loved my job and I thought I was going to do that forever. I wanted to teach music ever since I could remember. And, you know, throughout my career, I had a very clear professional mission, which was to inspire people to discover their voice. And while I was teaching choirs and conducting all across New York State and presenting all over the country, that was like very literal, right? People, we were singing, we were making music, people were finding their voice. And so when COVID happened and, you know, I was no longer able to be in front of my kids that same way. In fact, if you remember, singing itself was very dangerous, right? You know, I had to adjust the way I was able to live this mission. Mm-hmm. And so during that time of COVID, it's, you know, important part of my story. I actually moved out of my house because my husband and I decided we were going to get a divorce. And I moved out of my house with my kids, who were 5 and 7 at the time, the same weekend the world shut down.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Indeed. Yeah. It was a lot. And I had to, you know, looking back, it was this beautiful opportunity to reevaluate what I wanted in my life. You know, I didn't have the distractions that I was actually really counting on, right? I mean, like, here I was going to, you know, eat my feelings. I was going to, like, go off in Miami with my sister and, like, find all of the possible distractions in the world to keep me from my feelings. Well, COVID gifted me the opportunity to literally stay at home alone with my feelings. So I didn't have the luxury of escaping. I had to actually deal with them.
Face them.
Yeah, yeah. And it was painful, but it was the biggest gift, because in that time I was able to really get clear about what my priorities were. And I had to ask myself some pretty difficult questions, including, like, who did I want to be? What did that mean? Who did future Jen, you know, become? And so that really led me in this direction of my own healing. Mm-hmm. You know, I dove into the research. That's when I started my PhD in educational psychology. I always loved cognitive neuroscience. So I was, continuing to be a big nerd about all things brains. And I really committed to, again, my own healing. And when the time came to decide whether I was going to go back to work or not, my mind was like, of course, you know, you have this great job, you have this great career, of course you're going to go back. But my body was screaming at me, follow your calling, Jen, like, go do this other thing. And I listened. And I'll tell you, I wrote my resignation letter in February of 2021. And I felt amazing. And then 4 days later, I was a sobby mess on my couch. What did I do? I'm a single mom. How could I possibly give up this job and move into, you know, business? But, you know, I practice everything I teach, everything. Yeah. And, you know, that's those micro habits or patterns, as you call them, are the things that got me from that part of, you know, sitting on the couch sobbing, or even, you know, that weekend that I was alone when COVID and the world shut down, to not only owning my own business and reaching kids and teachers and school leaders all around the world, but then being on the TEDx stage a year and a half later. I mean, that didn't happen by accident. It happened because of the things that I am teaching. It happened because of my ability to be self-aware and self-regulate, recognize when my brain is feeding me all sorts of BS that I can now say, this is, you know, thank you, but no thank you, I'm doing this. And that's the way. That's the way.
Wow. The depth of choice that you made, not just once or twice, but, you know, continuously, let you where you are today. When you were younger, when you look back at your younger years, starting out maybe as an educator, even before, who did you model? Like, who did you look up to? Who was your idol?
That's a great question. At the time, I thought I was going to teach music for my whole life. And so my idol was actually my high school chorus teacher, who I'm still friends with today. You know, he was somebody, you know, he shared the importance of elevating humanity with something beautiful. Mm. And if you had the opportunity to make something more beautiful in this world, then not only is it your responsibility as a human, but more importantly, you need to share it. And, you know, that lesson was very clear to me in the classroom, but there's so much transfer there, right? If you have the opportunity to make this world more beautiful, then what are you waiting for? Mm. You know, nobody gets out alive. Like, can we just be really clear about that, right? We can't take anything with us. So we have choices all along. And I know we live in a world where it's just easy to point a finger at somebody else and at something else that, you know, I'm angry today because so-and-so did me wrong, or this is my situation now. And, you know, it is what it is. It's not. it never is the way it is. It's the way you think it is. And you have so much more agency than you realize. And if people just started to wake up and realize their ability to make a conscious choice at any moment of your day, I mean, that's how we change the world. And, you know, you asked me about urgency. Our kids deserve a world where people are conscious. Yeah. Our kids deserve the opportunity to learn that they can be conscious and make choices that really align with who they want to be.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with you. And I do believe, like Whitney Houston, that the children are our future.
They are. I'm going to bust out into song.
And I mean, you could probably sing it a lot better than I can, because I cannot sing for saving my life. And we should teach them well, but that starts with the adults. That starts with you, that starts with me, that starts with everyone that's watching and listening.
That's right.
What rubs you the absolute complete wrong way?
Oh, stubbornness.
Ooh,
that drives me insane. Like, even saying that word, I have a physical aversion to it, because there is so much we don't know. Right. I mean, there's so much you don't know. And so when I encounter somebody who is very set in their ways, it's taken me a long time to kind of, you know, let that go and just be like, you know, well, I love that journey for you. And just kind of let it go. Right. Yeah. I love that for you. And that's it. You know, it's taken me a long time to not give somebody like that all of my energy and trying to convince them otherwise. It's not actually my job.
Yeah. Yeah. So true. So you have two kids that are now what? And they're in their teenage years.
Oh no, not yet. They are in third grade and fifth grade. So
okay.
my daughter is almost 9 and my son is 11. He's although identifies as a preteen. So
yeah.
We're getting there.
So you have two young kids. You're following your calling after COVID, mm-hmm. or through COVID. You're by yourself. You're a single mom, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you create? And you have your own business. How in the world do you create balance in your life? What do to juggle it all?
You know, I don't look at it as balance or juggling. And that's, I think, part of it too. And it's something that I share with the people I work with also, that if I was going to do things differently, which, you know, going from a life of being a teacher to being an entrepreneur is, you know, it's vastly different. I had to, you know, reacquaint myself and make new relationships with time. I had to make new relationships with money. I had to make new relationships with what it meant to, you know, work. You know, and I realized in all of that, I could design a life the way that I wanted. And I think that was part of that reflective process for me during COVID, when I didn't really have a choice. It was, well, what do I want? You know, I want to be able to wake up in the morning and make pancakes for my kids before they go to school and meditate and like do some yoga in the morning. So I actually don't turn on my computer until 10 o'clock most days. You know, that's something that I really love. And so this idea of balance and juggling, even that imagery seems very stressful to me. Mm-hmm. So I like to think of it as work-life blend. It's a blend, mm-hmm. you know, especially like working from home most of the time, as I'm traveling, doing workshops and talking with people, I'm home. So it's very much blended, which means that sometimes like I could binge Netflix for a day if I wanted to, or go hang out at the spa with my friends, or spend a day here or in the coffee shop, like really getting into something that I'm super inspired about, because the end product is going to be making a huge difference in this world. So I built a business not only that aligns with my calling and my professional mission, but also that supports a lifestyle that I've always wanted. Because again, otherwise, like, what am I doing? If I was just working myself to the bone the same way that I felt when I was teaching, that really isn't aligned anymore. So it's always coming back to this alignment.
When I really appreciate what you said, work-life blend.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a balance, it's a blend.
Yeah.
Really, really appreciate you pointing that out. When your kids look at you and they tell someone else about you, what do they say about you?
I ask them that sometimes. I'm like,
I bet.
Yeah. Like, what do you think I do? You know, every once in a while, my daughter will surprise me. She's like, so what did you do today? And she's like, actually interested, you know, and I'll tell her, oh, I had some meetings. You know, I was on the podcast, you know, I have this awesome success pattern show later today, you know, whatever it is. But it's funny to hear them because they've heard me, right? I mean, we lived together for 18 months, you know, completely as I was transitioning. And before Empowered Educator even started, I continued on my music path. I created a virtual singing community that ended up being this global entity where people would come. I don't think we talked about this. People would come on Zoom and sing, which sounds crazy because everyone had to be on mute when we were singing, which is why I didn't call it a choir. But what happened, Brigitte, was something magical, was that because people were on mute, they actually felt really empowered to use their voice because they weren't embarrassed to sing anymore because nobody could hear them.
Hold on. You're saying you guys were all on a big Zoom screen and everyone was unmuted, was muted, and they were singing in their own environment.
Yes.
And yeah. They were singing, although no one could hear them other than themselves.
Yeah. Yes.
Ooh, that gives me the goosebumps.
Oh, it was one of the most beautiful things I've ever done because, again, I connected back to my mission. I wanted to inspire people to discover their voice. So I was like, how do I do this now? Let me try this thing. And I have people from like India and Kazakhstan and Turkey and Japan all coming together and singing. You know, I'd have a track that I would play that I created that I would, you know, whatever. But, you know, it was magical. So I bring this up because a lot of this happened during a time where my kids would be in the living room and I would be at the end of my dining room table hosting these kinds of events. And so they would be like, what are you doing? You know, so they were so curious and they know now really that what my mission is. And they've seen the choices that I've made and the pivots that I've made to, you know, they might seem different in what it is that I'm doing, but the why has never changed. And they've seen that.
What a beautiful model you are for your children.
Thank you.
What a beautiful concept that is.
Yeah.
Because we're all modeling for our kids. If we want to or not, they're constantly watching.
Yep.
And even if they're not constantly, if they're not consciously watching, when we're around our children, in whichever role, parent, educator, whatever, they're watching. We have an impact. Mm-hmm. And I so appreciate what you just shared with us on what you're doing with this platform. That just made my day. More of that.
Yes, will do.
especially during a time when we were so disconnected, yeah. Bringing connection together through music.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. It's connection. It's humanity. You know, more of that and less of the nonsense, please.
Yes. Amen, sister. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Mm-hmm. So this is such an important and beautiful conversation. How do people connect to you? Because I know they already connected to you. How do people actually get in touch with you?
Sure. Well, one of the easiest places is, you know, Facebook, which is Empowered Educator Faculty Room. It's a really great space where I do like lots of live trainings and it's a beautiful community. Again, it's a community super important to me of other empowered educators who are part of this work. So if you are a parent, a teacher, an administrator, or like know a teacher, this place is where you want to be or where you want to direct them to. And then of course my website, empowerededucator.com. I actually have a free training about how to manage stress like a boss that's coming up at the end of the month. That's completely free. And the details are also on my Facebook page and on my website. And then of course, if you are listening, you have access to my free ebook and you can get that at empowerededucator.com/ebook.
Super. So get the ebook, get the Empowered Educator ebook, connect with Jen on the Facebook group. And Jen, can folks also email you?
Oh, please. Yeah. If you have a story to tell or a question to ask or something to share, I would love to connect with you on email. And that's just Jen at empowerededucator.com.
So jen@empowerededucator.com is the email. The Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/empowerededucatorfacultyroom, all one word. And very simple, Jen's website is empowerededucator.com. Go get your ebook there. It's empowerededucator.com/ebook. With which words would you like to leave today, Jen?
Oh, I will tell you the thing that's on my desk that I look at all the time. It's a big one. You know, so many times we don't feel like we're being enough or we're doing enough. Enough is a decision. It is not an amount. And you are the only person that gets to decide whether or not it's enough.
Beautiful. We will leave it at that. Thank you, Jen, for being on the Success Pattern Show, guys. Thank you for tuning in today. Come back next week, same time, same place, with another great guest expert. Very excited to see you then. Jen, thank you. Until next week. Ciao. Thank you for tuning in, and you will notice opportunities to apply success patterns daily while eagerly anticipating next week's content-rich success patterns.